Okay, great. You probably all have to consent to being recorded now. Thanks to these strict privacy rules. Ned, Ned, you mentioned the Therapy Lamb article. I've never read it, but I'm going to photocopy it and add it to Canvas for whoever wants to take a look at it. Maybe just make it good gentle reading, and then we could all get together and reflect on it. Anybody else read that article, or only Ned came across it?
I couldn't find it in the Gush files, so I didn't read it.
I have like the hard copy of the book upstairs. So I'm gonna yeah, Ned's got it. Okay, so I'm gonna photocopy that and add it to Canvas. There's like a few other articles that I think are worthwhile reading that I'll upload also. And we could schmooze about them as we get deeper into the SIGGIS. Okay, so just scheduling wise, I think our next year is gonna be Sunday. I don't think it makes sense to have Shear on some Gedalia. Just it's a brutal day and I don't know. Fast day and it's hard to focus. And then also you're not gonna really have enough time to look at the Makoros because I'm gonna add a bunch of Makoros Motzei Rosh Hashanah. I'll talk about what those will be about at the end of Shir today. All right, so without further ado, let's get started. I'm gonna share the source sheet here. All right. So I wanted to make one, you guys could all see the source sheet. Thumbs up if you could see it. Okay. So I wanted to make one comment just reviewing what we saw on why on whether halacha would defer to a kol kamina kamedina when it comes to hezek riyah. Specifically, we saw the Rishonim raise the question, if there's a minhag not to care about hezek riyah, would that minhag be binding and exempt the neighbor from having to contribute to the wall? So we saw Machlokas Rishonim about this. Again, just to refresh your memory, I think Rabbeinu Yonah explicitly brought two days about it. Yeah. Well, Rabbeinu Yonah, we saw an explicit Machlokas Rishonim about this. We saw, for example, the Yad Rama, who said that Minhag would not be effective. So regardless of the Minhag HaMedina, there's a chiyuv to build a kosel to be Mesalik Hezek Riyah. Somebody like Rabbeinu Yonah explicitly disagreed. He said, Aval b'makom shenagu kulam shelo livnos, she'ein makpidim al Hezek Riyah, ein mechayven oso livnos. That was an explicit view of Rabbeinu Yonah. Now, we were clear in documenting the sugya that within the camp that believes that a minhag is not efficacious, so there are we saw, I think so far, two views about how to make sense of that. So what were the views? Why would a minhag not be efficacious to eliminate the duty to be misalik hezek riyah? Anybody remember? Josh?
I mean, one thing is if you say that it's not in the realm of like Nezikin and it's more of like the realm of Iser, so then.
Okay, good. Yeah. So one formulation was the Yad Rama. He had two formulations, both of which seem to say that it's in the realm of Iser. And again, here we were just careful to say that the Iser that he's talking about appears to be like a Bein Adam Lamakom type Iser, right? Such that it's not subject to the mechila of the wronged party. I think we spent a lot of time in the last year just fleshing out that distinction. Of course, many Dine Mamonis have Isurim. The point here seems to be that this is not a mammonist type iser. This is just a Bein Adam L'makom iser. Does that sound familiar to everybody? Yeah. Okay. Good. That was our analysis of the Yad Rama. The one view is that we're in the iser realm, and that's why it's not subject to a Kol Kamina Kamedina, because a Kol Kamina Kamedina is a mammonist type halacha. Was there another view that we saw, Romy?
Yeah, that was your reading of the Shur HaRashba. That
Yeah.
right there are two, basically there are two. You can make a distinction within Dine Mamonos, like public related Mamonos or public law and private law, public or private Mamonos, where basically when it comes to something that relates to the private law, then an individual can or a minhag can kind of forego that law for some other consideration. But when it comes, if it's a public interest, then individual, either literally like an individual person or individual minhagim can't override that.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a really nice way of putting it. What we were suggesting at the end of last year in this Tshuva Rashba Beis Reish Lamed Ches is that even within Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, so put aside the Yad Rama's view that this is Bein Adam L'Makom, even within Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, you have to distinguish between two different types of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. There's individual Bein Adam to his individual Chaveiro, right? So there's like a specific Chaver that has the right to be Mochel. Those will be subject to Kol Kamina Gamedina, because I guess the Echidim could be Mochel. It's subject to people waiving the right. But then there's like a Bein Adam L'Chaveiro in the Tzibor sense, where it's an obligation to your fellows in society at large, or to the community of Klal Yisrael. So still Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, but not to any individual, it's not reducible to any individual Yachid or any collection of Yechidim. That's not going to be subject to Mechila. All right, does that make sense to you guys? So you see how there's, it's, you know, this is a distinction between like a public type of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro and a private type of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And let me just say a little more about how I understood this to emerge from the Tshuva HaRashba. So he said, the way I was reading this, I think this was contrary to Zechariah's reading, right? Zechariah, your initial reading was to merge this with the Yad Rama, correct? Yeah. But what we were suggesting at the end of the shir is this. So the Rashi writes, "Im nagu shelo lahakbid." Is this too small, or you guys could see the text? I can make a little bigger here. Let's see.
You can see it.
Oh, you can see it. Okay,
I can see it. I know that other people.
Great. Again, this is like Kobe's point. Minag b'teos is a non-minag. She'en on the mechilas ha-hakpada ella b'mamanish she'adam rash alitin ha-shalo alizik b'nechatav. The only time non-hakpada is halachically efficacious is in those cases where you could always just be mochel or give it away. And that's the areas where mechila works, meaning there's another party to whom you could easily just grant the right. But here it's different. I mean, in my reading, it's a different type of mamonis. Aval eno rashai lifro gidron shel Yisrael. You can't be porek. In some gersos, it says lifrot. The geder of bnei Yisrael v'shelo linog b'tznias. Now let's just assume for a moment that all these things go together. Gidron Shel Yisrael, Linhog Bitsnias, and Gorim L'Shechina Shetestalik Miyisrael. So what does that phrase Lifro Gidron Shel Yisrael mean? Okay, so the way I was reading it last time is that this means that a Jewish society should look a certain way. Maybe even when an outsider looks in, a Jewish community has a certain outward appearance, and no individual has the right or the power to suddenly change the way the Jewish community looks. Does that make sense? So like the Sibor is supposed to have a certain constitution, a certain structure, and it's not up to any individual to change that. Okay? Everybody on board for that reading, just very generally right now. So you could say even, this way of organizing, of ordering a Jewish society is connected with like the Shechina resting on it. And, you know, no individual is able to modify that ordering of society. Chaya, does that sound good? More or less?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Kobe, you have a thought on this?
I think it sounds like an okay reading. I don't know, nothing more.
What is it? Sounds okay.
It sounds okay.
I mean, you're not so high on it.
I mean, I think it's adding in this whole idea of there's some level of expectation for a Jewish community to look like that's like maybe not so clear.
Okay.
And not connected to Hezekiah necessarily?
Well, Hezekiah, I think, is part of it in that this type of privacy is just is a kind of the way a Jewish society is supposed to be ordered, regardless of any individual's rights being protected. See what I'm saying? Does that make sense to the rest of you guys? Is that a persuasive formulation? So let me give another example. I gave the example last time of the speeding example. Well, what's like a good analogy, right? Anybody have time to think of a good analogy over the weekend? I have like an analogy. It's kind of a weird analogy for yeshiva setting, just based off something I read in the paper before Shabbat. But it's about universities, more relevant in co-ed universities, prohibiting relationships between teachers and students, right? And the point there, well, let's, you know, the point of the discussion, I don't know if anybody saw this article, but the point was, you know, it's not really about, what if both parties agree to it, right? Let's say the teacher is on board for the relationship, the student agrees to the relationship, and the student is of age to consent to the relationship. You know, it's just like bad for universities to allow the line between like teaching and personal relationships to be blurred. Does that make sense? You can think of a lot of cases where this kind of value just exists regardless of the rights of any individual being violated. I don't know. Is that a good example? Noah, is that a good example?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like took issue with your formulation in the sense that sort of the same point that you made to Zachariah in my read of Rabbeinu Tam, which is the way you formulated it is like when there's like a clear issue with the tzibor, the yachid doesn't have the right of like sort of breaking those boundaries or however you translate the word lefrok. But like, you know, they're clearly, but it's like it's not the yachid disagreeing with the tzibor's practices in this case. It's the yachid trying to like jump on the practices of the tzibor. It's like the minhag not to be makpid.
Right. But I think you might even say like a localized tzibor doesn't have the power to change like what the tzibor with a capital tzadi is supposed to look like.
So it's right? Like Klal Yisrael as opposed to like a particular B'nai HaYir.
Exactly. Like even Tinek, right, is constrained by what Jews ought to do, right? That's the thought. So like Tinek is not the bialim to change the constitution of Klal Yisrael. That's the thought at least. So I think that's one way of formulating this Rashba idea. Let me say another point. There's a slightly different way of formulating this, closer to what I think what we were getting at in Shir last time. And that is just like respect for the law itself. So maybe this is, tell me what you think, if this is how different this is from the previous formulation. So this phrase, I just did a little research on this. The phrase lifrok gidron shel Yisrael, right? So I think Romy and I were discussing this after Shir. Romy didn't like the examples that I was giving in Shir last week, because they all pertain to like just respecting the law for the law, respecting the law for the law's sake. So for example, in the speeding example that I gave, even if everybody driving next to you is mochel on the potential harm that they might suffer from your speeding, still you can't speed because the law, like it shows disrespect for the law to speed. Romy, is that what we were discussing?
More or less, I think, yeah.
I think you didn't like it because it's like, but you're saying, well, it really just comes down to are you respecting the law or not?
Yeah, is that why I didn't like it?
You tell me.
I thought I didn't like it because I think it does cause damage and sets it bad. Well, I don't know. Let me think about that.
There's some particular harm that could result from it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a way of formulating this, Lifro Gidron Shel Yisrael, as saying, well, look, it just, it breaks with like Jewish, with like, almost like a takana. It breaks with the law as it's been understood. And it almost like shows disrespect for the the halacha that's been established. So let me just give you two formulations that support this. If you look here at the Beis Yosef in Yerideas, I'm in Kuf Tesvav. So this is about Gvinas Akum, whether you could use non-Jewish cheese. It was a chashash that, you know, they would put the milk to sit in like the intestines of a non-kosher animal. So the Machlokes are shown about this, but the Beis Yosef says, everyone should abide by this prohibition. Why? Because b'chol sh'ar mekomos Yisrael sh'shamatu shamam no'agim lasar. You know what? There's just like a Jewish practice to prohibit this, regardless of the technical halachic issur of whether the milk is put inside something treif or something kosher. Why? The lifros gidron shel Yisrael kedoshim asher gidru avos olam chachmei mishnah. You know, it's just wrong to break the fence, right? Literally to break away from the rules that were enacted by the Chachmei HaMishnah. So to my mind, this sounds less of an issue about like there's some objective value in how the tzibor is ordered with this like value of tznius, etc. And this really just seems like respect for the takanos and the way the Mishnah laid down the law. So basically the difference? Thoughts on this example. So the idea here would just be that if you take this interpretation and the Rosh was just saying, look, there's been a Jewish practice to conduct ourselves this way. A particular tzibor, like it's bad policy to allow a particular tzibor to deviate from what the Mishnah lays down. But not that there's any intrinsic wrongdoing other than the kind of disrespect that it reflects towards the takanos that have been in place. Everybody thoughts on this? Does everybody see the distinction between the two possible readings of the Rashba, or anybody want to push back? Let me give one more source while you're chewing that over. The Rashba himself in a tshuva and chilek dalid reish samach dalid was asked about somebody who was mosar moda gita. So, being Moser Moda on a get. Anybody know what that is? Anybody, any Gittin people? Being Moser Moda on a get. So being Moser Moda on a get is, anybody? Noah, you know. Probably. Or Zachary, you want to step in?
It's like a preemptive bittul, right? Saying like, I'm going to be forced to give a get, or I'm going to be giving a get sometime in the future. But this Moda is to declare that it's invalid.
Yeah, exactly. You basically, a husband gets up and says, you know, this get, even though I'm writing it, it's invalid. I'm doing it under duress, et cetera, et cetera. Actually sat on a din Torah where a husband, like the dayanim are going to issue something against him. So he's like, okay, fine, penalize me. Areini moser moda, that get that was given. Machmas. Now I'm writing this get, machmas onas. And basically the first thing they do when they write gittin is mevato al moda. So it's a big deal. You shouldn't, you know, takana, you shouldn't be moser moda on a get. And you could see here, the Shoel asked, do we give makas mardus to somebody who's moser moda on a get? Because it's very bad, right? Because then the get might be given and the woman might not known that it was disqualified. And then she thinks she's divorced and single when really she's married. So the Shoel here says, what happens in a case if someone's moser moda on a get? Do we punish him? Especially in a case where it didn't cause any harm. Afagav de lo mine churba. Kivin shepirsim miyad habitav amoda. Meaning if you publicize the moda, no real bad effect comes from it, right? Because everybody knows the get is puffle now. Everybody follow? So the question to the Rashba was, are we going to penalize somebody for doing this, even though the Gemara says you shouldn't, in a case where nothing bad resulted? So the Rasha responds, tshuva. Any volunteers to read the tshuva of the Rashba here? What's his answer? Who wants to volunteer to read the Rashba's tshuva? Benji, you want to take it away?
sure. Teshuva. V'chol dor v'dor harishut Nitzanah Lazeh, Lebetin, Lisar Vehochot, Misha Noheg Shalok Shura, Beporitz Gadro, Shal Yisrael.
Yeah. What's the Rashba's answer?
That, like, I guess it's like it's up to the people to kind of give the permission to Beit Din to figure out exactly which minhagot are like the ones.
Close, right? In every generation, permission is given to Beit Din to beat up somebody or to punish somebody who's noheg shelo kashura, who behaves inappropriately, who poreitz gidron shel Yisrael, who like breaks the gedarim of Yisrael. Now, what's the connotation of poreitz gidron shel Yisrael? It's the exact same phrase that's used in our tshuva. What's the connotation here?
Meaning not necessarily like something which is mefarish iser b'halacha, but something which like goes against the communal standards that we've set.
Yeah, that's right. But it seems like nothing bad came of this particular case, so no one was harmed. But it goes against like the takana in the Gemara. And the Bezin in each generation has rishus to punish people for breaching the laws, breaching the takana. So the point that I just want to take out of here is in this usage, the phrase clearly connotes somebody just like not showing respect for the law as it's been laid down and understood over time. But it doesn't seem to be about any objective harm or any objective ordering of the community. But we're punishing people for just like not obeying the law. So just to tease out the difference again, I think there's a slight difference here between reading the Rashba saying tznius is a sibor value and no yachid could, or even no community could change the objective way the Jewish community is supposed to look. And this different type of reading, which would say, look, this is a takana that's been around for a long time. The Mishnah talks about it. We shouldn't allow individuals or even small communities to break with the takanos and laws that have been in place. The difference is just that in the first formulation, the value seems to be some objective ordering of the community. In the latter formulation, the value just seems to be respect for like the takanos as they've been understood over time. Romy?
Yeah, don't you run into the problem of why this particular halacha was to others and why certain minhagim are problematic?
Yeah, this is the million-dollar question. Like, why some things yes, why some things no, right?
No, well, I mean, yes, but especially, I mean, you could ask that in any case. You could have asked that according to the last reading. But in this reading, it's much more of a problem.
Like, why over here is it Gidron Shal Yisrael?
I mean, if it's really just about, yeah, right, if it's really about, you know, the general law, and if there's a long-standing practice, then a lot of things are long-standing practice.
Yeah, but go back to the Beis Yosef, right? The Beis Yosef here in Yerodeasim and Kuftes Vav, when he's talking about the Gvinas Aklam discussion, he seems to be saying, look, in some cases it's clearly mutter, right? Because they're not using, they're not putting the milk in non-kosher animals. But he's like, but you know what? This takana has been around for a long time. We got to uphold it. I think you just get into like which, like what's the value in that case, right, Romy?
Well, no, I mean, according to this last reading, it's not about what the value is, right? Because it sounds like the point is just if it's a long-standing thing, then it doesn't matter what the underlying value is. You can't overturn it. So I'm just saying that if that's true, then most of halacha is long-standing. I mean, you know, is a long-standing practice, in which case there should be very few things that are subject to minhag. It almost sounds like what we're saying is the reason you can't have a minhag to not do this is because there's a really, really strong minhag to do it.
And a chanami, maybe. Is that a problem? Or?
Well, that particular formulation is not a problem. It's just a problem if you don't apply that across the board, right? Because in anything, right, if you say, oh, well, this has been a thing since Bilam, then therefore you have to follow it. So then anything that's been a minhag, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's something that's a million-dollar question. Like, which things rise to the level then of, okay, now they're enshrined in law and should be protected, right, and which things could change? That's a question that we're going to have to address later on, which we're going to talk about. Right. Yeah. But does everybody agree that there's this difference between the formulations? Kari, are you on board for that?
Yeah, no, I agree with what's going on here in the basic from the latter Shidrashba is different. I don't know. I'm still a little on the fence about the earlier Shidrashba. I think following it up with Shlolinhog Bitsnius or Salik Shechina Misrael. I don't know. Those sounds pretty intense.
Yeah, so you're saying here it sounds like it's much more stronger, right?
Right, like Gidron Shel Yisrael, not just as like, you know, as a convention, but Gidron Shel Yisrael as in like Gidre Arayos or at least Gidre Tznius or
right, right. So you're like the value. First, so you would like the first reading of the Rashba better, the first approach.
That this is some sort of Isser function.
Well, not that function.
Or just even between the two.
Right. I'm saying, are you going back to your reading, merging with the Yadarma, or my first reading that this is like the objective ordering of the Jewish community should allow for privacy and sneas, you know, as a general, the way the community should look?
Yeah, no, I'd say I'm more comfortable with that of these two new readings.
Yeah. Okay, good. So I want to now, that's two theories as to why minhag should not work. So one is the Isser theory advanced by the Yadarma. And the second is the theory, you know, these different permutations of how to make sense of the Tshuvas HaRashba. So let me just want to raise a third theory very quickly. So we have this rush in Perek Aleph Siman Vav. The rush here quotes two deos, whether minhag works to override Hezekiah. And he says something interesting. So he says, Yesh mefarshim, dehu adin b'chatzer, b'makam shenagu ligdor, ein mechai v'noso. Shemakam shenagu shelo ligdor, ein mechai v'noso. Okay. So he says, some people hold that if there's a minag not to kibbut hezekriya, you're pater in a chatzer. Okay. So what's his proof? Very interesting proof, by the way. Let me get a chance to see the proof here of the rush. Ned, you know there's a balloon floating around behind you. UFO. So what's the proof? Volunteer. Sarah, what's the rush's proof? Someone tell us. So his point is that anybody?
There's more Hezekri in Agina.
So there's more Hezekri in Agina, and in Gina, it seems to depend on Minag, right? So if there's more Hezekri in Agina, and Gina depends on Minag, then Chatzer Lachas Kama Vakama should depend on Minag, right? Why in the world do you think there's more Hezekri in Agina? Right, the Hachazino El de Nafesh Hazeka Diriya Begina Femi Bukhatzer. That's a very bad proof, though. Why in the world would you think is that a valid suggestion, Josh?
No, because we said it might just be Ayin Hara, which might be a separate thing.
Exactly. So that argument conflates the notion that Manda Amar Lav Shmei Hezek would concede that there's some Isser in Gina. With the contention, with the proposition that if you hold Shmei Hezek, then Hezek Riyah of Gina is more Chomer than Chatzer. Right? It's really just a fallacious inference. Everybody see the fallacious inference? The inference assumes that because if you hold Lav Shmei Hezek, there's going to be Hezek Riyah or Isser in a Gina, then Gina is always more Chomer than Chatzer. But that's not true, right? Because it's only more chomer than chatzer if you hold there's no such thing as hezekriya. If there's no such thing as hezekriya, then there's the ayin hara issue in Gina. But once you hold there is hezekriya, then chatzer itself is much more extreme than Gina. So this first view is really based on a fallacious inference. And he says, v'yesh mefarshim devachatzer afilu b'machom shenagu shelo ligdor mechai v'noso. So that a minog is not effective at all when it comes to hezekriya. Why? What's the reason? Mishum de v'chatzer nafesh hazeka. what's the reason why minhag is not effective at all when it comes to hezekriya?
There's just too much hezek there.
Yeah, there's much more hezek. So what do you think that means, Zachariah, and how do you think this relates to the earlier approaches? Remember, the earlier approach is the Adarma issue of Isser, and then we have the Rashba public law answer.
I don't think I mentioned this when I wrote the post, but pretty much Noah and I's reading of the Rabbeinu Tam was kind of inspired by this rush, that perhaps there's some damages that are just so great that a minhag is not sufficient to be mochel on them. Just we don't let big things like that just drop by the wayside implicitly.
Yeah, I think that's right. Meaning, the idea is, you know, there are some harms that are so severe that it's almost like there's such a strong interest in protecting the yachid that the tzibor's custom can't override that, right, Zachariah? So it's like we think of this in terms of constitutional rights. Life and liberty are so basic that the tzibor, you know, Congress can't get together and make laws that are going to infringe upon them. So to hear the Rush seems to say, chatzer, there's so much hezek when it comes to hezek riyana chatzer that it is immune to decisions of the tzibor. So just to contextualize this against the other answers, I think it's diametrically opposed to them. Because the Yad Arma's move of talking about mitzvah bin adam lamakom is basically saying that the nizak is so inconsequential that his collective mechila doesn't exonerate the roeh from his religious obligation towards God to not be voyeuristic or, you know, to not have hirhurim asurim. The Rashba's approach, the way I was reading it, is saying the yachid, in a similar sense to the Adarma, is not the bailim. He's not the object of the harm. It's the community as a whole, or it's the law that's being harmed by this practice of the community. So we don't allow the community to change, to allow the practice. This approach of the Rush seems to be saying the nizak is suffering so much harm, right? So this is so much like nizak focus in a yachid sense, that in order to protect him, we're not going to allow the tzibor to take up a custom that's going to allow him to be harmed. You see that, guys? So I think it's really just when you, not only is it different in terms of not focusing on Isser and not focusing on this Gidron Shel Yisrael, it's very different in terms of the object, like the nizak centric dimension of it, right? This is when you're talking in terms of nezek, like nafish hezeka, it sounds like we're really worried about the harm suffered by the victim, and it's his rights that explain why the minhag is rendered invalid. Okay, so we have a hand from Josh and then a hand from Romy.
Isn't that kind of like a ridiculous way of viewing hezek riya? Like, you could be mocha like $20,000 of damage to your car, can't you? But like someone looking at your garden or your chutzner is that bad?
Well, you're saying this just seems weird given that you can be mochel on a lot of other things, but not on, like, why should hezek riya be the one thing you can't be mochel on? Okay, so actually I think we're going to see today some of the views on the Rishonim that explain why hezek riya should be different, right? So even if you think about it just conceptually, Josh, right, there's a certain permanence to hezek riya. It's ongoing, right? It's very difficult to estimate its value. It's very hard to know when it's going to occur. So I think there are ways to distinguish hezek riya from other nezikin. But I think you're right that prima facie it seems a little strange. Yeah.
I mean, you can just distinguish between the minhag and the explicit mechila. as in very nice people can be mochel $20,000, but you don't want to live in a society where everyone's implicitly mochel $20,000.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Zachary, also, meaning what I was saying would explain why you can't even be mochel. What Zachary is saying, Josh, there's no indication in the Rush that mechila is ineffective, only that a communal's actions can't waive the yachid nezek. Josh, that would be the easiest answer to your question. Romy?
Yeah, I was going to ask about the mechila versus midnight thing and whether or not, meaning, because I actually don't really see, and maybe we'll see it later, how you could explain the mechila. I see how the minhag part works out. I don't see how the mechila thing works out. Even if you can distinguish, you know, and say, oh, a husky is different because you don't know when he's always going to be looking. And so it might be unique as a din, but that doesn't mean that, you know, I can mechila. Say, I know that he's going to look whenever, you know, that I'm not going to know when he's going to look. And that this is a unique din, and I'm still mochel on it. But apparently, again, if you choose to say this also applies to mechila, that would also not work, which was strange.
Right. So you want to know in general what would be the theory for mechila not working? So we're gonna get to that, you know, downstream. Again, it may not be persuasive, but at least we'll see Rishonim addressing that. Yeah. Ned, you have a hand?
Yeah. With regards to your objection to the Rush's first point, didn't we say with the Meiri that within the Meiri's own approach that the Gina Shiny can be read as that everyone agrees to Hezekriya and Gina, and that Gina Shiny is the higher level of Hezek?
Yeah. You definitely could read it that way. It's a possible reading, but you're not forced to read it that way, right? So yeah, so if you want to read the Gemara as saying Gina Shiny, that there's more severe Hezekriya in the case of Gina, then the argument works. Right? Okay. But it's not a good argument because it assumes that reading of the Gemara when, you know, there's a very easy way to read the Gemara differently.
Okay.
Yeah. But so Ned, your point is like I was too quick to just call that a fallacious reading. It's more a fallacious inference from the Gemara Shakwa Vitaria, right? Okay. Because you can't deduce that from the Gemara Shaka Vitaria, because all you get from the Gemara Shaka Vitaria is that if there's no Hezekriya, there's still an Isser by Gina. You don't get that when there is Hezekriya, Hezekriya is more severe by Gina. Yeah. A good clarification. Okay. So now I want to move to the main event. Let me just say, again, the tour is 2 days about this. Very nice summary in Simon Kofen and Zion. Generally, Kofen also lost those coastal Beinayim. Yeshomrim hadik kofen lasos kosel b'neim dafka kishein minag beir minag yadua avalam noag and shelo lasos ein kofen adoni aviras dal kato shafilu yesh minag beir shelo lasos on ein hochan achra v'kofen lasos. So just, you know, 2 days about whether we defer to minag. I just want to say also, and this is something that's just to foreshadow what we're going to discuss later on in this man. I don't know if it's this man or next man. I don't know if Elul's man, right? Are we done with Elul's man? Or is it one's man? Hard to know how to break things down. So later on, we'll discuss this interesting point about Dafka Kishe'en Be'ir Minhag. I think this came up in my discussion with Josh after Shir. You see, if you hold like the Rishonim, that Akol Kaminag HaMedina overrides Hezekriya, then our Mishnah is really just talking about a case of a new city where there's no established Minhag. Everybody see that? Because our Mishnah talks about Hezekriya. So then the Hezekriya is really only relevant in the set of cases where there's no Minhag. Kishein Be'ir Minhag Yadua. And this came up, I think, also in the Rush. He says, that's where Hezekriya and these discussions become relevant. So notice that's like an extraordinary limitation on the application of the Mishnah, right? Like when there's an established custom prevails. So why is the Mishnah bothering us with all these dinim? Hey, you're setting up a new town. We have to know, what are the laws in the new town, right? And that's where the Mishnah becomes relevant. So this is something I want to take up later on in the year when we talk about Akol Kaminag HaMedina and the force of Minag. is it strange to limit many of the dinim of the Gemara to only the case, exclusively to the case of an ir chadasha? Does everybody see that? Because when it's established city, you'll defer to the minhagim. Anybody have thoughts on this now? But notice the Rush is doing this already, and the Torah is doing this. They're saying once you hold that a kol kamina gamedina is a real principle, then the other set of dinim are only applicable in an ir chadasha. So just keep that in mind. Like, does that trouble you? I know Josh was a little bothered by this, right? It's like, what? We're sitting here and we're learning all these dinim only for an ir chadasha, right? So some people feel like this undermines, like, the, like, why, like, if so many of these dinim are limited in ir chadasha, why are they important? Gosh, I think that was your sentiment, right? You know, to which I'll respond just to motivate the other side. When you learn Zerayim, do you say, like, what, these dinim are only relevant in Eretz Yisrael, Bizman, that Kol Yoshev Alah, right? So, like, why are we even learning these dinim? Does anybody feel that way about Zerayim? Or Josh, are you going to say, like, there's a difference between
the... I would just say it's different because if you say that it applies to every single case, like in anything monetary whatsoever, then that's kind of just like...
Kind of just like what?
I don't know. That's... At least Zerayim, like, has a set place where it always exists. This would be saying that nothing monetary ever really exists.
Wait, there's a set logical space, right, for the Ir Chadasha. Right? It's an interesting point that we'll take up when we get to this discussion. I just want to make the point now is that don't dismiss the importance of the rules that apply in an Ir Chadasha. That surely has halachic significance that in the absence of established norms, the halacha says this is what the default rules are. So I think that's like a very halachically significant category. In the same way that mitzvah klius baretz is a very significant halachic category. Right? And you're saying you're clearly not a Zionist if you think those are the same. No, sorry. Romy. Romy, did you have a hand? No. Okay, did somebody have a hand that was up and then went down? Ned, you had a hand that was up and then went down.
Yeah, you said what I wanted to say.
Okay, what were you going to say, Ned?
About how the Ir Chadasha is representative of like the ideal halachic state, or like the clean halachic state.
Yeah, I think that's a really important. I think that is like a very significant halachic category. Good. Okay, so let's move on to the Chazaka and Hezekria. Everybody ready to move on? Yeah? Is everybody feeling a little fried by Zoom Shear, or we're okay, Zoom Shear? It's like... Everyone's holding cup. Better than in person, worse than in person. So what are we feeling?
Way worse.
Way worse than in person. Man, nobody here is loving Zoom Shear. Shmuel, what's your take? Worse than in person?
I mean, nothing compares to having everyone together in person, you know.
Wow. It's Shechina's Shora when we're together in the room. Okay, so. Good. So we're going to keep as little Zoom Shear as possible. Guys, are you not loving the Zoom format? No? Even though you have the comforts of your own home to stretch out in? And...
ADHD and Zoom do not play well together.
Ah, I hear that. Yeah. All right. So let's get into the discussion of Chazaka B'Hezekria. You guys want a 2-minute break to rest your eyes before we move on, or just go straight into it? Or Yontif, we got to cover ground. Okay. So let's talk about chazakos. So brief introduction to chazakos. I put here on the Makor Shita Gemara and Daf Vav. We're not there yet on Daf Vav. We have to get through the sugyas of Makif and Nika first. But, you know, it's closely related to our first part discussion. We have a very short discussion here of what's called Chezkas Tashmishin. We're going to spend time later in the year discussing Chazakos. But, you know, crudely for our purposes now, without getting into the underlying legal basis for Chazakos, the Gemara in the first parak tells us that there's a way to gain certain use rights in your neighbor's property. You could become muchzak in having a legal right to use property that's not yours, correct? That's what we'll call a cheska tashmishin, because you're not making an ownership claim. It's simply a use claim, right? A right to certain uses of the neighboring property. Anybody get a chance to see the Gemara in Daf Vav? Just give us the short version of, okay, Shmuel. Tell us the Achzik Luhurdi, Achzik Luchshuri stuff.
Yeah, so if you have this chazaka like that, you're able to sort of like have your roof drip into your friend's property, so like that continues. And then like again with the pouring into your friend's property, and then there are certain opinions like maybe if you can pour, then maybe it's obvious that you can drip. Some people don't subscribe to that opinion.
Right. You can imagine, like, you know, the classic example, that's the case here, of achzik l'natfi, achzik l'shafchi. You know, your gutters and leaders extend, like they go into the neighbor's yard, right? And it's been doing that for the last 10 years and he never complains. So now you're muchzak, right? You have a legal right to allow your gutters and leaders to drain into his property. Right, Jamal?
Right.
So that's certain use, right? Right. Just a cheskat tashmish, the right to, I guess you'd, in legal terms, you'd call that like an easement in secular law. So you have this now right to use the drainage into his property. And what's the achzik luhurdi lo achzik lichshuri? These are rabbims. What's going on here?
Oh, so like the thin beams and thick beams, a very similar case. So like if you were able to do the thin beams, then chazaka you can continue to lean the thin beams on the wall and the thick beams. Chazaka can continue with the thick beams, and there are opinions both ways as to whether each of the thick and thin beams sort of translate to the other one.
Yeah. So the second case is about using your neighbor's wall to support your beams. You know, once you're muchzak to do that, you could have an ongoing right to continue to use it. Now, later on in the year, we'll talk about what's the legal basis. Why should this work? Why? What kind of right is this? We don't need to worry about that right now. That's called a chezkas tashmishin, a right to use your neighbor's property. In the second parak, on daf chabez, for example, or the other cases, we're introduced to something a little different, chezkas nezikin. Right, so what's a chezkas nezikin? A little different from a cheskas tashmishin. The cheskas nezikin discussion. Anybody get a chance to see this gemara? Rafi, did you get a chance to see this gemara? Not yet. Josh, tell us about this concept.
It was just about whether or not you can make a chazaka on something that hurts the other person. I think it was about like putting a ladder near them and then an animal might like jump on their property or something.
Exactly, right? So you could imagine, I'll just give the contemporary example. Can you put a ladder next to your house, next to your wall, lean a ladder against your wall that really is going to allow squirrels and raccoons to get into your neighbor's roof, right? That's like the variation off the Mishnah's case. And basically, the Gemara is not sure about this. The Gemara says maybe no, it's Asur because the Grama bin Azikin. Then the Gemara gives this little case. Rav Yosef, let somebody who wants to take us through this case. The Rav Yosef case. Let's see, anybody get a chance to prepare it?
Sure.
Zachari, is that a hand?
Yeah.
Great. So, go for it.
So he has these date trees. And then these blood letters would go and do their work nearby. Tosa says on their own property, but it was near the date trees.
And right. So Rav Yosef's neighbor had a needle clinic, right? A safe needle clinic.
So they're spilling all this blood, and then ravens came and they were eating from the blood and then going and like getting blood all over the dates, and they were ruining them.
They're dropping the gross stuff or something, harming Rav Yosef's property some way.
That's right.
Right. So the activity in the neighbor's property creates a nuisance in yours, right? In a way that like makes your yard dirty or that's going whatever. It's like somehow doing something bad in your property. Noise maybe of the ravens, right? Or yeah.
Right. So he says, get these ravens out of here. Fukili korkomehata. Which Abai responded, Abai, what time did you have? Isn't it just grandma?
This is very interesting back and forth about whether you have a legal claim based off Nezikin to stop the neighbor from doing the bloodletting that attracts the raven. Okay. Abaye says you have no legal right against him, but then seems like but then we have this name Rav Tuvi that grumbled as Zikin's author. So the Gemara seems to say, okay, fine, it's author, but what's the Gemara's move?
But didn't these blood letters have a chazaka to do this activity? To do this activity which will produce negative?
Oh, so maybe they've been doing this for a long time. And just like we saw in the Cheskas Tashmishin case, that, you know, if you've been using your neighbor's property for a long time, that gives you an affirmative right to use it. So to here, the needle clinic has been going on for a few years. I guess Rav Yosef failed to object initially. So now there's a established use right that the neighbor has to run his clinic, regardless of the harm that it causes to Rav Yosef. Right, Zecharia?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So what does the Gemara say?
To respond, ain chazaka l'nezik. There's no chazaka for nezik anymore.
Excellent. So a general rule, right, that no chazakos can be established when it comes to harm. So that seems like a very wide, very important rule. But what does the Gemara say, Zecharia?
When it immediately qualifies it, La Bitmar La, but did we not say about this? Rav Mari Amar B'Kutra, this is talking about pretty much exclusively a case of someone who's has a nice little kivshan, is producing a lot of smoke and ash. So that kind of thing has no chazaka. Rav Zud Amar B'Sakisa, it's talking about an above ground bathroom, which, you know, produces a very bad smell. So that kind of nezikin has no chazaka.
Excellent. So what we get from this Gemara is probably one of the most important distinctions in the second parak above Basra, is that, namely, what's the general rule, Zecharia?
The general rule seems to be in chazaka and nezikin.
But?
Or, right. Or you can go the other way, as in generally, chazaka works for a lot of uses, but not in the case of nezikin. Then we seem to say, well, there's these special cases where it actually, these are the few cases where it doesn't apply.
Yeah, so I would say the rule would be severe nezikin cannot have chazaka, but light nezikin are subject to chazaka. Right? So you could gain an affirmative right in your property, again, to do in your property something that's going to cause light nezek in your neighbor's property, but you can't gain an affirmative right in your own property to do something that's going to cause severe nezek to your neighbor. We don't exactly know what's severe, what's light yet, but that seems to be the distinction that Gemara is drawing. Zecharia is right. If you look at Tosos, for example, we'll have time to look at this Gemara more carefully, but Tosos is very strict about what these things are. Tosos says, Kutra, Dafka b'kutra de kivshan shehu gadol umazik b'yoser. Right, so this is like not just a barbecue, but it's like a furnace, right? That has like a lot of fumes and smoke. That's I guess really unbearable. And then what's the base akise example, right? So this is pre-plumbing, right? But it sounds like even pre-plumbing, there are two madrigas of base akise. What does this distinguish between, Zecharia?
He says this was above ground, which was extremely bad smell, as opposed to below ground.
Yeah. So Tosafot even says the Beis Akise thing, it really just depends on, you know, how potent the odor is going to be and to the neighboring yard. Okay. So that, if it's really bad, you can have a chazaka. If it's not as severe, then you could have a chazaka. Okay. Now the question becomes, an interesting question for us. Oh, and let me say one more thing in the Gemara, just so we have it on our radar screen for later on. The Gemara's case is the case of bloodletting, right? Case of bloodletting. The bloodletting brought the ravens. The ravens were causing a nuisance in Rav Yossi's yard. So is that like the Kutra and Beis Akise example, or is that different? So what does the Gemara say? Anybody else see the Gemara's maskana? Josh, you saw the Gemara's maskana. What does the Gemara say?
He said that just subjectively to him, it was as if it was like the bath.
Yeah. Josh, you're going to have to stop muting yourself before you finish your sentences.
Sorry.
You just did it again.
There, I found the button instead of using the space bar. No, I'll make sure that I don't do it.
Good. Exactly. The Gemara seems to inject a subjective component, which is fascinating on its own. Rabbi Yossi says, well, you know what? For me, having all these like dirty needles or, you know, the noise of the raven, that is as bad as Kutran Beis Akisei. So Josh is right. It's interesting. The Gemara seems to inject a subjective component into defining severe versus moderate harm. So we'll bracket that for now. We'll come back to that discussion. Romy, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, you just see the Gemara does a similar thing like that in the beginning of Loyachpor, where it says that for wine, if you have an otsar of wine or something, then you can't open a Beit Nachtomin and some other things underneath. And then, I mean, sorry, for other otsar you can't, and for wine you can. And then somebody says, oh, but for my wine, it is damaging. So it's not as subjective, but it's also kind of in between there, with the smoke.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very interesting question in those cases. To what extent do we care about these like subjective evaluations of the nizak? Yeah, 100%. And we'll see the Rishonim talk about this. So there's a lot here that we're going to discuss. But let's bring this discussion home now to Hezek Riyah. So should there be a chazaka when it comes to Hezek Riyah? Now, this is Machlokes Rishonim. So it's always just, you should know off the bat, there's dialectic here. Rishonim disagree about whether you could be muchzak in Hezek Riyah, meaning if I open a window that peers into your yard, can I now have an affirmative right to keep that window open? Like a muchzak now, like a cheskas nezikin. Like Mara said, generally there is a cheskas nezikin, except for extreme cases. Correct? Did I see the legal question? Very, very straightforward. It's a natural question. Okay. So I think let's start. The first person to address this is, I think, the Rif. We don't have the tshuva, the Rif on its own. We only have it through the Rimigash, unless I'm missing something, right? Does anybody know if the fish tshuva Rif appears separately? I've only seen it through the Rimigash. So what does the Rimigash say, and why does the Rimigash raise this issue? May you see this Rimigash? Beis and Beis. Rimigash is the Talmud of the Rif, right? Like any good Talmud, seems to disagree with his Rebbe here. May I get a chance to see the Rimigash? Ned, do you get a chance to see the Rimigash? Not yet. Anybody see the Rimigash? Kobe, you see the Rimigash? No? Josh, you get a chance to see the Rimigash yet? Shmuel, you get a chance to see the Rimigash yet? Benji? Get a chance to see it? Romy? Charya? See, good thing we didn't have Shir on Sunday. See, there's not enough time for Shir prep. Okay, so I'll give you a brief overview of the Rimigash, Shmuel. You didn't get to see it, Shmuel? Here. Is that like a crying or like a schwitzing?
I don't know, but with this new Zoom update, we got all these options over here. So we got to take advantage of some of them.
Right, right. So I'll very briefly, the Rimigash weighs in on this issue because he's worried about the coherence of the first Mishnah and Gemara. Meaning the Gemara infers from the fact that it's only, according to one reading, right? It's only Imratsu. Only if they consented to build a wall do they have to build a wall, right? Remember that reading is L'man Damar Hezek V'Lav Shmei Hezek. So Jimmy Gass says, I don't really understand how you can infer Lav Shmei Hezek from our Gemara. Maybe it's just a case where the parties are muchzak already as not caring about each other seeing into their properties. Right, so maybe it's a case where they split the properties, but there's no obligation to build a wall because they're already established with a muchzakus of not caring about each other's hezek riyah. So here's the question: Bim tomar man leimalon to mishum hezek riyah lav shmei hezeku dil malo lameim lecha de hezek riyah shmei hezek. Here, the reason why the party could resist building a wall, because already muksak as living within each other's vision. But if there's no chazaka, meaning there's no precedent where they didn't care. So the point is that the Rimigash just wants to say maybe there's a case, the way of reading the Mishnah, as being a case where there's already muchzakos. And muchzakos defeats the Hezek Riya Chiyuv. Does everybody see that suggestion of the Rimigash? That's the suggestion he makes. So he has a few answers. Look what he says here. Let's read this part where he quotes the Rif, the Chazina l'Rabbeinu. Anybody want to take a stab at reading that? Just that one line, very easy line. Kobe, you want to take a stab at it? Just the Chazina l'Rabbeinu.
The Chazina Rabbeinu Harav Zalashon Dekatav B'Tshuvat She'ela Dechalon Nami Heka De'it Ben Hezekiya Late Lechazaka.
Yeah. So what's the point?
That even in a place like Chalon, where there's Hezekiya, there's not necessarily going to be a Chazaka.
Stronger than that, right? So just read again stronger. Chalon Nami Heka De'it Ben Hezekiya Late Lechazaka. What does that mean?
In the case of Chalon,
where there is Hezek Riya.
Even when there is Hezek Riya, there's not necessarily a chazaka that you can't build the windows.
There's no chazaka that would generate an ongoing right to continue to use the Chalon and be mazik with Hezek Riya. Right. So he cites the riff here in this one line. Whenever there's a Chalon with Hezek Riya, less lechazaka. There's no basis, there's no capacity to get a chazaka. Good, Kobe? So the riff is on paper as saying there's no chazaka when it comes to Hezek Riya. The Rimigash himself seems to disagree. Let's see. What he wants to say in this line, you guys will look at it more carefully after Shir when you have time to go through this on your own. What he says here is that there's a Gemara in Cheskas Abatim that implies that certain windows do have chazakas. And he says over here, Shaminan Mina, de Chalon de Isbe Hazek Re'ia, Isle Chazaka. Right? That you could get a muchzakos on a chalon with Hezek Re'ia. So just read through this Rimigash and try to make sense of what are they disagreeing about. Okay, everyone? Now, I want to draw your attention to the Ramban. So Machlokas here in the Rimigash and the Rif, before next year, you'll look here carefully to see what exactly the dispute is about. If you look at the Ramban, I just want to draw your attention to a few lines. Anybody here get a chance to see the Ramban? Raise your hand if you saw the Ramban. Shmuel, give us a crying face. Make it official. Let the record reflect the crying face that Shmuel is putting. Ooh, angry face. There we go. So thank you, Ned, for the assist with Shmuel. There's the Ramban here in Daf Nun Tes, really important on that discussion of Chalon. When is there a chazaka for Chalon? You'll see what the Ramban distinguishes. But look at the main rationale that he advances for why there should not be a chazaka for Hezek Riya. So he cites the Rif. And he says, if there is Hezek Riya in the window, lo'olam ein lo chazaka. Somebody just read this bolded section for me, volunteer. And we'll look at it more carefully in the next year. Romy, go for it.
Klamar, im yesh bo hezekriya la'olam in lo chazaka, shekol davar sheyesh bo hezekriya kigun chalonos v'chol shekiyot behen in lo chazaka, deke kutro beta kise demo.
So he cites the Rif as holding there's no muchzakas for Hezekriya. What's the underlying legal rationale that the Rif cites according to the Ramban's version? Romy?
It's very damaging.
Like Kutra and Beis Akise, which we just saw in Gemara, right? It's considered to be an excessive nezek. Okay. Josh earlier said, wait a second, you know, like I wouldn't characterize Hezekriah as like worse than being able, you know, $20,000 worth of damage. Right, Josh? Here, the Rif catapults Hezekriah not just into the category of Nezikin, but the most severe form of Nezikin. Kutra and Beis Akise, the categories that are not subject to Chazakos. Correct? So on what basis does he do that? Right, why? I don't know. If I just woke you up, Ezra, and said, Ezra, what do you think Hezekriah is, severe Nezek or moderate Nezek? Like, where would you label it?
I would probably label it as, like, more moderate.
Moderate. Okay. Rafi, what about you? Are you a severe Hezek?
I would say the same.
Moderate, right? But the Rif goes all the way in the opposite direction, right? He says, for most Nezikin, there are Chazakos. There are two cases that the Gemara gives where you can't have a Chazako, Kutra and Beis Akise, and Hezekriah is the same caliber as those two things. Okay? Anybody sympathetic to the Rif off of that? Romy, you're sympathetic? Josh is sympathetic? Yeah? Good. You want to say why, Josh? Romy? Go, Josh.
Me. You can say that like the common denominator, I mean, this is like what you were saying before, but like things like smoke or bad smell or the fact that this guy's always looking is something that's like always going to stop you from being able to use your property like to the extent that you want to, as opposed to normal Nezikin where it's just like you chop down my tree, but this is, I can never go there, it always smells bad, there's someone always looking at me.
Oh, so there's like a certain permanence to it, something like that. Yeah, that's one good theory. Romy?
I actually think it should be even worse than Kutra Beis Akise. Like, it's the idea is, it's like, as opposed to just, you know, someone's taking, harming my money or my property that's like external to me, or even if they're creating like a bad smell or smoke that like gets into my usage, the Hezekriah is like a personal, again, depends how much. It might also be usage, I guess. But then you could take it very far and say it's like the most damaging that you can do because it's like my personal self that you are, you know, exposing.
I think that's a really nice distinction. Romy's saying there's something about Hezekriah that it affects your person more immediately or more directly than the Kutra and Beis Akise, right? It's something more personal about it, Romy. Is that the idea? Yeah, what do you think of Romy's suggestion? Right? There's something more personal about Hezekriah and the way it affects you and your person than Kutra and Beis Akise. So let's look at the Ramban's formulation. I think the Ramban's formulation touches on both the ideas that Josh and Romy are getting at. And, you know, we'll pause after this Ramban and we'll go a little deeper into it after next year. So let's look at this Ramban. Okay, great formulation. Umistavra kavase. He says, I think the halacha is like the Rif. And here you can see why the Ramban's so great. Right, he's going to go a little deeper in analysis here. He's not just going to give us the legal conclusion. The Rif was very vague. The Rif just said, it's like Kutra and Beis Akise. Shani Omer, for I hold, says the Ramban, Kutra and Beis Akise, the reason why Kutra and Beis Akise don't have a chazaka, lefi shehen nizikin baguf, because these are nizikin that affect your person, not just your property. That's why ein lahem chazaka. And lo amru chazaka bin nizikin ela bin nizke mamon. Very nice distinction the Ramban draws. The Gemara, which we saw in Lo Yachbor, just said, there's a category of nizikin like Kutra and Beis Akise that don't have chazakos, everything else has. We said, the Gemara is distinguishing between severe and moderate harms. How does the Ramban draw the crucial distinction? What is he? What's the dividing line? Romy, you kind of said it.
The kind of harm, meaning, is it personal or is it like external, internal, and external? I don't exactly how to formulate it, but.
Well, harm to your person and harm to your property.
Right.
Chazaka, there is chazaka bin azikin for niske mamon. So can your gutters and leaders drip into a neighbor's property? Yeah. You could have a chazaka there. Can you do something that's going to harm his yard? Yes. Because that's just nezek to his mamon. But if something's a nezikin baguf, something's going to affect the nezek in his own person, not just his property, that's already not subject to chazakos. Why? What's the underlying theory for that? So Ramban says, she'ein nizkan el bekoslan shel chavero. In those cases of harming property, adam mochel al koslo, afilu yapil osa mamish. Okay, you're going to suffer some monetary damage. People are mochel on those types of things. It's just a check. The remedy is just a check and a call to the fix-it man. Aval kutro beis hakise, shehu atzmo nizok umistayer bahem, ein lahem chazaka. But once you're already dealing with personal distress and harm that accrues to your person, that's not really the kind of thing that you could have a chazaka on. And he says, that also explains very nicely the chirping of the birds case, where Rav Yossi said, hey, the presence of the ravens and the vultures, whatever they are, is like Kutran Beis Hakise. Right, Zecharia, we in your case, why are they similar according to the Ramban? What does he say?
Because he sets the Itzanes, he is going to be simply bothered by it personally.
That's right.
From the noise.
Yeah, it's mitzayer him, right? It causes him like personal distress. So the threshold for the Ramban is personal versus property damage. He seems to think of personal in terms of tsar, right? Like distress is central to that notion of personal harm. That's not subject to chazakos. And then he goes on a little more, and look what he says. Hu adin, the kol shekein, the hezek re'iyah. So of course, hezek re'iyah falls in this class, in this set of nizke haguf that a person atzmo is nizak mitzayer b'hem, because hezek re'iyah is nizke adam ba'adam hu. That's a really important formulation for how we think about hezek re'iyah. According to the Ramban, hezek re'iyah is not just something that affects your property, limiting your use. It causes tsar to your person. I think this is the first formulation we've seen along these lines, correct? Yeah. It's a very important formulation. And then he says, and this is maybe problematic, but something we should chew over. Why is hezek re'iyah nizkei adam ba'adam? So he says, imishum ayin ra, imishum lishna bisha, imishum tsniusa. So here he just throws out three possibilities as to why hezek re'iyah nizkei adam ba'adam, one being ayin hara, one being lishna bisha, one being tsnius. We have to figure out why exactly these rise to the level of nizkei adam ba'adam. It's not obvious to me that tsnius, maybe, he's clearly talking about it harming the victim in some way, right? The person being seen. Lishna bisha and ayin hara, it's not obvious to me that those should be adam ba'adam and tsar. No, Zecharia?
I agree. This is not. Also, Lishna Bisha just seems to be coming out of nowhere. Yeah. Lashon Hara, like he'll find out all the dirt on his friend.
Right. Or people are going to maybe know about his stuff and they're going to talk about him. Yeah. I think these are not obvious at all. So you have to figure out how the Ramban makes this jump. And then he says, and here's a question that's not clear how this relates to the earlier point, Va'od, mi yodea. How could you ever be mochel for hezek re'iyah? It's really not quantifiable. You don't know how much it's going to affect you. Right? So Josh said, you know, oh, $25,000, you'll be mochel, but hezek re'iyah, you won't be mochel, right? Here the Ramban seems to be saying that you could have a chazaka when something is definite or precise, so you know what it is, you know what right it is that you're waiving. Hezek re'iyah is so amorphous so hard to know in advance how it's going to affect you that it's not subject to mechila. You don't really know how much harm you're going to suffer to be able to be mocha. So to my mind, it's an open question what role this is playing as distinct from niske adam ba'adam hu. So is Ramban saying that hezekri is niske adam ba'adam plus separately there's this concern of you don't know how much you're going to incur? And then he says something different. Ramban throws out a third rationale. The oda filu mochel hanizak, even if you have express in mechila, and then Ned, I'll take your hand. Kivan divadai osur hu lemazik lahaziko beriyo lehistakelbo ledas, since it's for sure prohibited for somebody to do this, the ein adam yachal izar bekach lamud kol hayom batzimat enayim, al korchenu nomar lezeh stom chalon chaval techte tadir. So this line is also complicated. So even if you were to have express in mechila, I think what the Ramban is doing here is he's going into Yad Ramah camp, and he's saying there's also an iser that's not subject to the mechila of the nizak, because he says here al techte tadir. He goes into that chet language. So to my reading of the Ramban, although we shall reserve judgment until you have a chance to look at it more carefully, the Ramban seems to be saying three things. For our purposes right now, the most important is the first. He's saying it's hezekri is not subject to chazakas because it's tsar haguf, it's niske adam ba'adam, and he gives three vague reasons why it's tsar haguf and niske adam ba'adam. Then he has a theory about why mechila should be invalid. So Ramban's probably assuming that chazakos are predicated on types of mechilas. So it's not a devar katsuf, so you can't be mochel. And then, again, depending how you read this last line, it seems like the Ramban says, oh, there's also something that's not nitan the mechila because there's a chet component that's baked in here. Okay? So I want us to we got the basic mekoros out. I want us to think more about what exactly is the debate about Chazaka Behezagriya, and what exactly is the Ramban saying? Right now, one important takeaway is the Ramban's, I think, breakthrough distinction here that Hezek Re'iya is qualitatively a different type of Nezek than Niske Mamon. Right? The issue at bar here is not harm to property, it's harm to oneself and one's person. And I think that's just like a new, or at least the Ramban's the first of what we've seen, the Ramban's the first to formulate that dimension of Hezek Re'iya, correct? Good. Thoughts on this? So, Romy, did you have a hand? Okay. Ned, you had a hand?
Yeah. I think you could say that for the Ramban, we haven't really addressed the question of how much to pay in the event that you are subject someone to Hezekiah. But I think for the Ramban, especially with his language where he introduces language of Isser, I think it makes sense to say that we'll treat Hezekiah as more of like a statutory damage versus like a classic, more classic damage.
So you're saying because there's no Tashlumen that's set out for it.
Right.
So this is a very interesting point. I think conventionally it's understood that there's never going to be a duty to compensate for Hezekiah. I think that's just accepted, or at least it's assumed. I want to be a little more open-minded about that, about, is Hezekiah compensable after the fact? Ned, you're saying from this Ramban here, it sounds like no, right? That's, and the Ister thing is supposed to say that it's not Nezikin in the classic sense, like other Nezikin.
And you would read the line, Umi Odea, Kama, Kalimati, Limcho, not as a technical issue, but fundamentally, that's indicative of that the very issue itself is non-quantifiable.
Right, right. So even though it's more severe, it's less easy to pin down. It's like what the exact harm is. But that doesn't vitiate the severity of the harm that you suffered, right, Ned?
Correct.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good. But do you like the Ramban formulation about Nizkiyad and Ba'adam because there's Tsar and it's still a little mysterious why these three things persistify the exact Tsar, Snias, Ayin Hara, and Lishnabisha. So we want to give more thought to that. Okay. So after Yantif, we'll talk about that. We'll just go a little deeper into the Chuvas Arif, a little deeper into the Rimigash and the Ramban. And some Chuvas Arashbas here that enhance the discussion. There's a Rambam here about Chazaka Behazikriya. So I want to get into this discussion a little deeper. Just note, by the way, the overlap between the discussion now, the Ramban's point, and the Rif's point, that there's no Chazaka because the Hezek is so severe. And that last Shita that we saw of the Rush about why Minhag doesn't work, the Rush that we saw in the last section said, how you want to remind us, what did the Rush say? That Minhag doesn't work, why?
Because it's such an intense Hezek.
Yeah, exactly. So there is this theme of that Hezek being a more intense Hezek. Arguably, the Ramban's analysis based off the Rif of Chazaka could shed light on what the Rush means, right? But doesn't, you know, you don't have to merge them together. Okay, so let's stop here. I want to wish everyone a Ksiva Chtima Tova. Really looking forward to a great year of learning. Everyone should have an enjoyable Yantif. Are we all on the same page that we should just do Sunday for the next year? So you'll have some Gedalia to think about prepare the Makaros and the Chazaka stuff. Great. So let's plan for next week. We'll do Sunday and Tuesday. I think there's a regular schedule planned for those days. Right? Sarya, make sense? Yeah. Okay. So
yeah, I think so.
Good. So Sunday Shir on Zoom and then Tuesday Shir on Zoom. Siva Vaksima Tova to everyone Shkayach on the Zoom share today.
Thank you.
Siva Vaksima Tova, guys.